Hello, stars. A Tin Candles horror story. Please take care of yourself and check the content warnings for each episode. Listener discretion is advised.
These things are true.
The world is dark.
The trees above us curl down like hands, holding us to the earth.
There are tunnels beneath the cabins.
The animals keep staring at us.
Electricity shorts out often.
You've lost 4 people in the last week.
Cathedral named my baby Winter.
A gun's been misplaced.
Someone's stolen the stash.
There's an interloper here.
And we are alive.
We see the distant shore. A coastal community in the Pacific Northwest, hidden away from major highways or prying eyes. There are cabins that surround a large central structure, roads and pathways carved into the soil, now thick with mud from too much rain too recently. If we were to judge this book by its cover, we would almost assume that it is abandoned. Perhaps a summer camp or a retreat lost to the coastal fog and encroaching tree line. Most of the cabins are empty. Most of the bunk beds are empty. But for some, joy is full, for today is a special day. Broderick Cathedral, the leader of this community, will be turning 50. An important day in anyone's story, but especially significant to our own. The day is for preparation, and later the breaking of bread, and then at last it will be night. These things are true. The world is dark, but community is important. We descend from the stormy sky, resolute but nervous, we approach. We will walk openly, for they will not see us, so focused they are on one another, or on the other, or on the day itself. Brother Reggie, when we find you in this full and open world, focusing on you and the light or the shadow you bring, what do we see when we see you?
I'm a big man, standing somewhere between 6'3 and 6'6. It's been a while since last I measured. It's not that measuring really means much or nothing. I've been standing here in the storeroom for probably an hour or so, just counting every single thing we got, cause shit just keeps going on missing, and well, we just can't have that, not when we're so close. Not today. I think I've got a clipboard nearby that just has a list of all the things we should have, all the things we wanted to have for, you know, big dinner and all for the send-off and all that, but as I'm going through the vegetables and they're just kind of turning to mush in my hands, there's just a lot of shit to do today, and I was really hoping that this wouldn't be one of them, and, well, I was wrong. And so as I'm going through finding what works and what doesn't, tossing what should obviously be tossed, and trying to see what can be saved from any of this, I think I'm just frustrated and steaming to myself, not really having much of an outlet to, you know, there's no one I can really talk to.
The morning storm fluctuates between prayer and screaming, and we hear the song of distant seabirds. Before we pull away, our hearts and eyes being drawn to elsewhere, is today a joy or a duty for you?
At one point, it would have been a joy, I think. When I first joined all those years ago, thinking about this day, knowing that it was going to come eventually, I don't know, I looked at it with bright eyes, the way that any kid would, thinking about the future, about something different than what I had. But now, after all this, all these people that have come through, the ones that have left, either by their own choice or circumstance, it's a duty at this point. And not one that I have much bad feelings over. It's good to do what I'm supposed to be doing. It's good to follow my role, keep things moving along, but it does kind of feel like I'm having to pick my feet up one by one, manually, more so than moved by something else.
Sometimes it is dangerous to stare too long at happiness, because sooner or later, happiness will stare back. We move away, but not too far from here. Sometimes nothing feels too far from here, and we find ourselves in one of the many bunkhouses scattered throughout this place. We see Sister Angela holding a note left on the bed previously occupied by Clive Lewis and Renetta Adler, who under the cover of night have fled this community together. The note only reads, "We are sorry. May all your travels be peaceful."
I read over the note a few times. I'm sad for them, as I've been sad for all of those that have left us so recently, so many. It's always such a shame to see family lose their way. I know that I'll have to tell someone. People will notice their absence sooner rather than later. I hate being the bearer of bad news, and poor Holly. I put the note in the pocket of my dress and start to gather myself to step into the rain and leave the cabin. There isn't much special about me. I am the type of person that is looked over in a crowd. My hair is dark, but not especially so. It is dull against the pallor of my skin. I seem to fade into the background. The fog that has started to move into the cabins seems to stick to me somehow. I'm wearing simple clothes, a dress with an apron in the front, working clothes, the kind where I can comfortably help with the chores, sweeping, laundry, whatever is needed of me. My boots are caked in the mud that has been clinging to all of us these past few days. The rain just doesn't seem to want to stop.
Do you dislike being the bearer of bad news because of the attention, or is it the wrong type of attention?
I don't like seeing people in pain. And so often, the messenger bears the brunt of that hurt, even if they don't deserve it. I know that Hen will be very disappointed to hear this news. I know that my fellow siblings, my family, will be hurt that more of us have left, that they couldn't even say goodbye properly, that they ran away into the night. I am sure that they are sorry. I believe that. But when I want to be looked at, it isn't with betrayal and pain in the eyes of those beholding me.
We move through the rain and we do not believe, but we see those that do. And for one, that belief is growing. Holly, when we see you in the large gathering hall in the central structure, what do we see when we see you?
I'm standing in the middle of this common space, kind of bored out of my mind. I want to help, but they won't let me. You see myself, a woman with an average frame, slightly chubbier than I used to be. My silhouette is accented by my belly that pokes out through my zip-up hoodie. I'm glowing, although I don't really think I want to be right now. My hair is shorter, shoulder length, slightly wavy. My complexion is not exactly fair. I've been out in the sun a bit. But I'm kind of pacing.
What is it that you are so busy waiting for?
That's a good question. I don't know. An end. A new beginning. Maybe not one that everyone expects, but there's a lot of eyes on me.
You see Hen, an elder in the community and the voice of Cathedral, clearing off the table from the morning meal. It does not take long with so few of you left here at the distant shore, and two less than yesterday. When no one here needs you, how does Holly pass her time?
I probably should be meditating or connecting with nature. Connecting with my purpose, connecting with anything. But I find myself pacing, antsy, anxious. I feel my heart. I feel my breath. Not in the way that they want me to, not in a meditative way, just... I'm just waiting. And I feel like I need to be doing.
You see, looking up from the ground, blood-red clouds boiling across the sky.
You did ask me to bring the thunder.
Dejin! Help! I've got the chalice, please!
Well, if they're following you, then I guess that takes care of a loose end for me.
All of you feel the earth beneath you shake and crack and break.
I feel that I have failed both of you, and I am sorry for that.
This has nothing to do with you being a bad leader.
Do you want a countdown? Oh, I think I want a countdown.
I wanted to help. I always had good intention. I did not deserve to die.
Now.
The Lucky Die Podcast is a weekly 5e Dungeons & Dragons actual play podcast. Join our adventure every Monday wherever you download podcasts by searching for The Lucky Die.
Hello, my name is Sam Dunnewald, and I'm here to tell you about Dice Exploder, a podcast where each week me and a rotating co-host take one tabletop RPG mechanic, just one mechanic, and break it down as deep as we possibly can. If you love thinking about role-playing games and how they work, this is the show for you. Come listen to me talk to Alex Roberts about love and pity, John Harper about elegance and layout, and Mikey Ham about, what else? Exploding dice! It's an interview show, a review show, a design show, and most of all, a show for anyone who loves these games. Come on down and join us. Find Dice Exploder at DiceExploder.com or wherever you get your podcasts.
We try to move into the sky to get a better look, but the trees, they hold us down. We see a form also by the tree line or waiting to be held, and we move toward them.
You see a young black man in his mid-20s. He's got medium brown skin, and he has these long twists in his hair that should have been kept up with, but in the time that he spent here, he just hasn't done it, and so they lock more tightly. His hair is dry, even in this rain and cold. He's wearing a loose-fitting linen shirt and old jeans that have been patched multiple times, and he sits barefoot, despite the cold, staring out at the cabins. And he holds a piece of a lavender bush between his fingers and just twists it slowly.
From here you see the young and thin form of Neil Cassidy, the youngest member of the group and a dedicated and true believer. Grateful to no longer be lost on the streets of Portland, but now has a family and a roof over his head. Like every morning, he searches for you, thrilled for you to delegate a task or a chore. He looks around corners and into cabins, calling out your name.
I think Laramie sort of sees this, and in this moment, despite being here for the time that he has, I think his instinct is just to lay down. And so he does. He lays down, and not really even hiding all that well in the low lavender bushes, but I think he lays down and figures Neil will find him when he finds him. And he takes that twig of lavender and kind of holds it to his nose, thinking of the memory of the scent that really isn't there anymore because of the cold.
If you could roll me 10d6 as you attempt to go unseen.
That's unfortunate. So I rolled 1 6 and 3 1s.
Neil Cassidy does not find you, not on the porch, not on the road. What is today to you? As someone finding a haven in lavender, what is a day with such an ending in mind?
It's terrifying. Laramie thinks about what could happen in the idea of traveling, and there is a part of him that as he holds this lavender to his nose and tries to remember that scent that thinks of Holly and thinks of the state of being pregnant in this time. And there's a fragment of a repressed memory of a sister whose name is at the tip of his tongue that last time he saw her, she was about 6 months pregnant. And I think that there's a fear there, a fear that keeps him hiding for as long as he can get away with it.
The story shifts like the light, and the four of you step into the scene. Sister Angela from the cabin, Mother Holly from the community area, Brother Reggie from the pantry, and Brother Laramie rising from the flowers like a coming spring you will not be here to notice or enjoy.
I think that Laramie gets up from the flowers and sort of brushes himself off, and you know, all the dry twigs that are sticking to him. And I think his face is just so dour in this moment, and he turns to see Reggie, and like a primal instinct, his face turns into a smile. It is fake, it is forced, but it is practiced, and it is very good. It is a very good smile as he looks to this older person. Brother Reggie, morning.
Oh, yeah. Morning, Brother Laramie. Sorry.
Is everything okay?
Yeah, everything's fine. Everything's fine. Nothing you need to worry yourself about. How are you doing this fine morning?
Oh, you know, just staying busy.
Good, good, good. Idle hands and all that.
Yeah, of course.
Holly, making her way out of the community center, sees everyone kind of gathering and, like, adjusts her back. It's obviously kind of sore, so she finds herself over on a bench and struggles to sit herself down.
I think seeing Holly, like, immediate, like, responsibility, like, switch flips on for Reggie, with Laramie, like, walking away, then, like, kind of beelines towards Holly in a way that doesn't feel, or in a way that Reggie is not trying to intend to look like, just like, oh, I'm walking straight at you. But in like, I'm making my way around to where you are. Good morning, Mother Holly. How are you doing?
She smiles back at you. Good morning, Brother Reggie. I'm okay. Just, you know.
Can I get you anything? You need any help? Or...
I was feeling a little bit thirsty. I was thinking about getting myself a glass of water, but...
I can get you some water. You don't need to trouble yourself none. I can go get you a glass. I could get you a jug. I'm sure we got a canteen around here somewhere.
A glass is fine.
Brother Reggie, if you could roll me 7d6, if you'd like to attempt to notice something...
Okay, that is 2 6s 1 1.
Out of the corner of your eye, there is a flash of glass and a camera is visible, peeking out from behind a tree in the distance, aimed at the settlement from the west.
I see that, and I think, I don't know if Holly notices this, but my eyes narrow in the way like a wolf stalking prey, or in the way that an eagle like spots a like a small animal from a distance and is ready to to just move in and strike. And so upon like having that kind of danger sense go off a little bit and go, excuse me, Mother Holly, I'll get that water for you real quick. Just, there's something I gotta check out.
Yeah, sure. No problem.
Of course, of course. Pardon.
Yeah, I think what happens is Laramie very much had no intention of running into Angela, but did anyway on accident. I think it was very much like he's walking with purpose, like turns back to see if Reggie is still watching, and then literally runs into her. And there's just this quiet, like, oof.
Oh, shit, I'm so sorry. Yeah, are you okay?
Yes, yeah, I'm fine, Brother Laramie. I'm sorry, I wasn't paying attention.
You all right? You're the second person I've seen this morning that seems a little put off.
Well, I'm sorry to say this, but it seems that Brother Clive and Sister Renetta have left.
I think you, like, looking at Laramie's face, you see him sort of register this information, and his face is, like, blank. And then after a second, that's probably too long, that he just goes, oh, I'm so sorry, that's, did they say where they went, or...
No, all I have is the... And she reaches into her pocket and pulls out the note, kind of shielding it as best she can from the rain. No, they didn't say where they were going. They must have left sometime last night. I was going to find Sister Henrietta to tell her so that she might speak with...
Yeah, of course. Do you want me to walk with you, or do you need anything?
I would certainly enjoy your company, Brother Laramie.
Okay, yeah. Let's go. I'll walk you. And I think he, like, we probably don't have, like, I don't know, maybe we have umbrellas, but I think he goes, we're near the side of one of the cabins, and there's a loose piece of, like, wood, and he just sort of takes it and, like, holds it over our heads as we walk to try to find Henrietta.
Have you been well this morning?
Staying busy. I saw Reggie, and he looks a little flustered as well. Neil seems to be staying busy too.
That's good.
Yeah. Just sort of, I guess, remembering things as we prepare for tonight.
We see Mother Holly sitting center light as the thunder cracks, Sister Angela and Brother Laramie moving in one direction, and Brother Reggie in the other. Mother Holly, where is the heart of your story at this moment?
I think I'm too observant. I think as much as Reggie wants to hide their purpose, I know that he's going somewhere and I want to follow.
Would you say the desire to follow has always been a strong trait in you as you look around this compound?
I think I've always had an urge to be safe. And I think I've led myself into places where I've had to follow. And once again, I lead myself into a place where I follow.
As you begin to move in Brother Reggie's wake, Brother Reggie, you now see the familiar face behind the camera. Zoe Glass, a troublesome young reporter from the nearest small rural town, who has shown up from time to time over the last year.
Have they seen me yet? Do they know that I've found them? I want my presence to come as a surprise.
Brother Reggie, if you could roll me 66.
I would love to. That is 2 sixes and 2 ones.
That is a success, and we're down to 4 dice for this scene. Holly, if you could roll me 4d6, not really to attempt to be quiet, but just to see how loud you are.
1 6, 1 1.
I want to sneak up on them, real quiet like. I want them to not know that I'm there until my hands are already at his shoulders. As I get behind him and slowly reach my hands towards his shoulders, there's a thought that comes across my mind. It'd be so easy. And I grab him by the shoulders and shake him. What the hell do you think you're doing here, boy? I told you you shouldn't be around here. You're playing with things you don't understand. If I have to tell you one more time to mind your damn business,
Reggie,
and leave. And I turn shocked seeing Holly. Mother Holly.
Brother Reggie, what is going on?
You hear the camera taking pictures very quickly of Mother Holly.
I'm going to try to grab his camera.
If you could roll me 3d6, Brother Reggie.
Absolutely. That is 1 1, no sixes.
Would you like to burn your vice to re-roll that one, or would you rather save it?
I would love to burn my vice. Ridge's vice is that he does have a bit of a sadistic streak. And so I think when I go to reach for the camera, it's not necessarily a kindness. It's not just pushing the camera lens away. No, it is snatching it with the intent on destruction.
If you could re-roll that single one, as Mother watches, as she always does.
That is still no sixes, but no ones.
These things are true. The world is dark.
Henrietta is in an important conversation with Cathedral.
Brother Clive and Sister Renetta didn't make it very far.
There is another reporter somewhere on the property.
Brother Reggie secretly knows they're related to the reporter Zoe Glass.
Brother Reggie has a cell phone and a secret contact.
Some of those missing drugs made it into some of the final meal.
2 of us knew each other before coming to this place. We haven't spoken about it.
The storm is getting worse.
And we are alive.
You reach for the camera, but you're not able to get it. Your foot is slick with the wetness of rain and mud on the scattered coral and marshland. Zoe begins to run out into the reeds, looking back over his shoulder as he escapes, taking photographs the entire time.
Get back here, damn it! And just, I'm struggling, trying to get my bearings on the ground, slipping in the mud, making a fool of myself in front of Mother Holly.
Brother Reggie, the phone in your pocket begins to vibrate.
and just like after not being able to get any purchase and just like kneeling here in the mud, feeling the buzzing in my pocket, I reach for it, pull it out.
There is a single text from an unsaved number. Someone called the feds. Throw this phone in the sea and never contact me again. As Zoe runs, he also pulls out a phone and makes a call. And beneath one of the many empty cabins here, there is a small sound coming from the pocket of someone who does not move, who does not breathe.